actually screams Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Go
fuck yourself.
Damn.
And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, enemies, this is the ESE Podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. I am one of your hosts. I keep trying to make myself the singular host. I don't know why. This is a coup happening live on the ESE Podcast. Anyway, this is a live street fight for the crown of AEW's biggest nerd. Anyway, but yeah, no, actually, that probably is still Brandon Thurston, if we're being honest. But what can you say about these weeks anymore? I mean, it's been like probably we're going on like a year and a half now where we've just been saying every week, man, what a great week. The wrestling quality has been so good. Is it fair to say at this point that somehow the best wrestling quality in the world evolved to get better overall, like all across the board,
right?
The product? Is that possible to say? I mean, there's two things you can say about that, right? And there's things that, and this is actually not where I was going with the intro of the show at all, but this is the discussion point now, so I'll hit my other tiny point, if I can remember it after this ramble. You obviously, Will Ospreay shows up, so that ups everybody's game. And you have new people showing up. Obviously, you have potential Josh Alexander. We just got Speedball. Kenny is back. You have people going, starting to come into their own, like Kyle. Got Takeshita going at full strength. You got all these really incredibly talented wrestlers out there. And the women's division has been on fire for going on 3 years now, you know? So, like, in terms of match quality. So, you know, I can't think of the last bad women's match we had. It's crazy, you know? I can't think of the last bad match we had, but I certainly can't think of it in the women's division, most definitely. You know, like, there have been some short matches, but I don't really consider those bad because they're just squashes. They're not meant to be earth-shattering, you know? Like, but yeah, I'm struggling to remember what my original joke point was going to be at the start of this. Maybe it'll come back to me at some point. And I'll just insert it as a gag at some point. But it was about somebody, whether they were going to be back or not. I can't remember. It was somebody who I haven't seen in a while. Oh, well. But yeah, that being said, Charlie, first of all, how are you today? And yeah, I mean, just some really solid wrestling this week, I would say. And
absolutely.
We are split it into two nights. Like, I didn't love that, but I mean, it's basketball, so, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And March Madness, the numbers already came out. Like, I think I saw 32 million viewers, so it was cracking. It was cracking, to say the least.
If AEW even got, like, 0.01% of that to stick around, we'd probably had one of the biggest shows ever.
I believe I saw something about it, actually, and they did really, really good. So, yeah, that's good shit. Yeah, it was another good week of wrestling, and we're incorporating a lot of the new people in AEW, just kind of our new, you know, there's been a lot of overturn in I'd say 6 or so months in AEW. There's been a lot of changes, a lot of things going on, and it's fully into the programming. We got returns, we got new wrestlers, we got some of our young wrestlers that are finally getting chances to shine, and overall, it's a really
young
healthy
bucks,
product,
if you will.
Yeah, it's a very, very healthy product right now, and it's making the weeks go by just so effortlessly, right? So
it's funny, I'll admit too, I didn't watch any of wrestling this week until like Sunday night. I watched I finally got around to Dynamite, and then I didn't watch any of Slam Dunk until last night. So like, I was just not really feeling it this week. I was not in a bad way. I was just kind of like this week because I was really busy. And so sitting down and actually like enjoying it made me feel really good about the week because I wasn't really sure. I was like, am I gonna think this was mid? Am I gonna really like this? Am I gonna not like this because of how I'm walking into this, you know?
Yeah, and it ended up delivering. So I guess let's jump into the favorites, and I have the ball this week. And we're jumping to none other than Billy Starks versus Mercedes Moné. This match kicked ass. Another great defense by Mercedes. She is crushing it every step of the way. I think the presentation of Billy the past couple weeks, there's a lot of people that have never seen her wrestle, that this is going to be the first time watching her wrestle, right? And I thought that was really well done. They explained in short detail and short video packages all of what makes her so special and why she is such a young and upcoming prospect. You know, we talk about like Billy Starks, Nick Wayne, so many of these young wrestlers, Lee Johnson, that it's like they're blue chip prospects almost. But the fact that they're already getting so much work so early, especially with Billy already having been a champion in Ring of Honor, it's like it's really cool to see. So, yeah, I was very impressed with her style going into this match. I thought there was many spots where it's like, fuck it, one of us is going to die kind of vibe. And that really worked to set the tone of this match because the crowd
I don't know what you
was
call
buying
it,
into it.
But that spot that they hit off, was it like the second turnbuckle or the top turnbuckle? Whichever the turnbuckle spot was where she like hit the fucking, I don't even know what to call it. It was almost like a pile driver-y like move or something, but like she had legs hooked and it's almost like a, I don't even know what to call it. It was cool though. And
it was very
cool.
Almost
kill Mercedes and she sold the shit of it. And it was one of the cooler, you know, near falls. Oh, but how, let's talk about that part of it even too. The barely getting the foot on the rope thing.
Yep.
I mean, that's
so good.
It's one thing to sell. That is the kind of sell that you can't really teach somebody. She has to know, okay, this looks really bad right now. It looks like it's going to kill me, right? Basically, you have to know what that feels like, right? Okay. And then decide, okay, I'm going to oversell on this, even though I was probably just going to sell this normally, because it looks like a devastating maneuver. That takes instinct, and it's clearly something that Mercedes does have, like, in spades. So I just I want to point that out, because when you notice stuff like that, you have to point it out, right? So
And Billy's, I believe they call it the Segoy driver. Like, it was, that thing was fucking disgusting. And there's going to be people that were shitting their pants a little bit at the move she just hit on Mercedes, so... Now this was hard hitting. You know, even if this is, if this entire, the entire point of this was just to kind of tee up Athena, right? If that was the entire point of it all, they made it interesting and it was enjoyable couple of weeks of television. I think that's all that matters, you know? So I really enjoyed this. Another Mercedes, you know, the title reign continues, right? And just, let me toss it to you here, Duke. How'd you feel about Billy like getting a TBS championship match on a massive Dynamite against one of the greatest champions in AEW?
She might be the most underrated in the women's division straight up because, I mean, I know she's mostly relegated to Ring of Honor, but, I mean, we've seen what she can do in multiple different occasions in Ring of Honor when we would still cover it. And, I mean, she was part of the main reason why I would even tune in every week because... It was like her and Athena were the most entertaining thing on the show every week. So seeing her shine here makes me really happy, obviously. And I'm kind of with you. I do think it will probably end up being a stepping stone just for Athena. But I do think if this is the tone we're setting with this match, then I would imagine when Athena steps in, it's going to be even crazier. Because this has always been the end game for me with Mercedes. I don't know if that's how it's going to end for this title reign. But in my mind, the biggest match, the most insane match she could have was with Athena because... Essentially, what she's been doing in AEW is what Athena has been doing in Ring of Honor for nigh on 5 years at this point. So, like, that needs to collide at some point, you know? You had this one person who was doing it in Japan and then eventually came to America and started doing it here. And you had, I mean, even people that don't know what's going on in Ring of Honor know what Athena is doing there. That's how much of an impact she's having. So, like,
very well put.
I think the fact that this match is even happening is just makes me really happy because the potential of it being an Athena match at the next pay-per-view or the pay-per-view beyond is exciting for me. I would like them to, I don't know if this is even remotely like a slight chance of possibility because of how close we are to the pay-per-view. I would rather them run it back with Billy again at the pay-per-view, put maybe more stakes on it or something. And that's when Athena comes in. I don't want them to force Athena onto this pay-per-view because then it just feels like we're putting the match on there to have it.
No, Athena's got to be all in. It's got to be.
I don't know. Athena's wrestled every pay-per-view this year. Mercedes has wrestled on every pay-per-view this year. So I don't know. I mean, Athena's probably wrestled on every Ring of Honor pay-per-view so far this year. But anyway. The joke about that is that they only do three. Anyway. I don't know. I forget what my original point was in all this, but yeah, no, I'm glad makes me happy to see it happen. And it's just, I really hope that we get a really big match with Athena. Cause like I said, that's been like what I've been locked in on. I mean, the only bigger match with Athena would probably be Jamie Hayter, I would think. Right. So, at least at this point, I mean, maybe Toni Storm, but I don't know. I'm almost more interested in the story of that, just to see what Athena does with this insanity. You know, like
honestly, yeah. So, yeah, I guess let's catalyst from that into your favorite this week, and it's no different than one you had a couple weeks ago.
Indeed.
For those that have been paying attention,
yeah. So I mean, I lock in on these feuds sometimes, you know, when they're really good and not getting the attention that they deserve. I do like to give them attention, and I think this is probably the best mid-card men's feud going on right now. That might be a stretch, but I think it might be. I mean, that's an actively happening right now. That's for a championship. Maybe I still might be too far, but anyway. But no, actually, let me think about it. The other Okada not really doing anything, and if Kenny's kind of having a tournament, yeah, I mean, I guess this probably would be the most, at least with a direct story tied to it, right? So that being said, Daniel Garcia took on Adam Cole again on Collision Slam Dunk Saturday. It was the opening match, and I like them putting this match on first, because this is exactly the kind of match that people that don't really know wrestling will watch it and understand that what they're seeing is really good, because these two guys are capable of making it look really smooth.
Kicking it off right in the ring too.
100%. And I did like that. I think they did a really good job, Charlie, with this match. They didn't have a promo video. They didn't have a video package. They didn't have a recap. You had commentary mentioning some things that had happened between the two groups. Undisputed Kingdom, of course, and Daniel Garcia and FTR. Daniel Garcia. I guess it would be Daniel Garcia, FTR, and 2.0. That's kind of his little faction. But FTR obviously really much more associated with Cope right now. But I'm sure FTR would make the save if it really came down to it. But Adam Cole and Daniel Garcia were telling a lot of the story in the ring. They weren't actually telling it. And that, I think, is a brilliant match to put in as your first match for people that maybe don't even really know wrestling, right? But they see that, and their brain's going to grok what's going on, because they're just aware of, like, what visual storytelling, I feel like, comes through in wrestling for even, like, lay people. But maybe I'm wrong. But I do think that was a good move. So I'll give you an example. It started off with, like, this sort of one-upsmanship, like, who's the better wrestler, who's the better technical wizard, who's the better this, who's better that, who can do more moves, right? And that kept on throughout the match. But I also noticed this sort of dip of Adam Cole back into his sort of heel arsenal a little bit, you know? And I thought that was interesting. And he was also capitalizing on the inexperience of Danny. So maybe it was just the fact that Danny was was framed as the inexperienced, you know, and Adam's framed as a veteran. Maybe that always makes you come off a little heelish, you know? But I do think that is an intentional thing that Adam Cole is doing. Yeah, they were both targeting previously injured limbs. Some of the near falls in this one were just phenomenal. I mean, biting the fucking, you know, on the edge of your seat, kind of like as soon as the fucking the referee's hand doesn't drop, everyone just like, I want to say during this match there was one specific near fall, I can't remember what the spot was, but everyone thought Danny was cooked, and he wasn't, and it was crazy.
And even for that split second, when you can get the audience, that's all that matters.
100%. And I mean, that's one of the most satisfying sounds in wrestling is the three without the smack of the mat from the ref, from the crowd. That is always just a phenomenal sound by just the three, you know, like so
it
good.
It hits every time.
It's so good. Oh yeah. And the submissions, there was two submission spots that were really good. There was, I think it was, shit. What did Adam get a figure four at one point, I believe. And then, you know, that was a pretty long little, you know, escape for Danny. And then I think Danny then attempted to hit the Dragon Tamer, which then Adam got out of rather quickly. And the crowd was going fucking nuts for that. Adam Cole hit a Panama Sunrise on the outside, or rather on the, like, I guess just on the apron. And then Danny falls to the ground, lifts him back up, tries to get the cover. Ultimately kicks out because it took him too long. Sets up for the boom. Time limit draw, Charlie. Now, I will say, I'm never a fan of time limit draws because I'd rather have a result almost every time. However, in this instance, I actually kind of dig it because it means we're getting a third match. So, and that means probably on the pay-per-view, I'd think. And it's probably, I mean, you know, so no time limit, you know, would probably be the gimmick. Probably still everybody banned from ringside. I'm using the future that was discussed after this match to explain why I think that. But I would have probably guessed at least another match at the very minimum at the end of this. So That being said, Charlie, I mean, just your thoughts on this match, this TNT Championship title match between Daniel Garcia and Adam Cole to open up Slam Dunk Saturday. So what do you think about this? I thought it was awesome.
If you want to make AEW stand out, right, and this is, you have all those eyes that are going to be watching, you just get right, you just kick it right off to people in the ring. I love, love, love when they do this. This makes you stand out. I think it shows, it highlights just what is the big difference between AEW and WWE. It's the wrestling first aspect. That's what it's always been. That it's wrestling on television. It's that is their pride. That they want to be the best wrestling you watch on television. So this is how you do it. And that I think is perfectly, in terms of just like a production aspect, I think that was perfect. Absolutely flawless. You know, we had a debate. God, it might have been 2 months ago now about time limit draws. And it felt like they were getting a little too close with it. Like I said, I can't even remember when that was. So it's been like 2 months, minimally. So they've held back a little bit. And because the last time they mentioned a time limit, I believe it was in Adam Cole, or I believe it was Daniel Garcia. And the crowd booed. And we had the big debate about, you know, they're clearly going to this a little too much because the crowd is booing and Lee Moriarty or Shane Taylor came out after that.
It's possible they worked on a better way to inform the wrestlers without having to say, you know, maybe they'll do the 15-minute time call now. Yep. But they're not going to do 5 minutes now unless – maybe they'll do like 15 and 5. That way the crowd's still like, okay, it could still end in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah.
There's – people have seen five-minute wrestling matches. They know if you turn on the jets, you can end a match in 5 minutes, right? So
– yeah, and
– I think it was getting down to a minute and people knowing if it gets to a minute, we're probably going to the full time. So they did that on the commentary this time that I forgot to mention. And I'm glad that you brought that up because it was a good move for them to have Shivani be like, and based on the fact that 5 minutes ago, it has probably been about 5 minutes. Probably what they did was at 5 minutes, someone clicked the timer and they had said, all right, Shivani, we're going to tell you when it's 60 seconds.
You know? And it worked for that. See, I think whether it is a change in philosophy or not, I think the time limit draw worked here and that's all that matters. Yeah. Right. And another thing we got to add here, there was a lot of stuff about when Adam Cole first returned. Man, he just didn't look right. He just didn't. Something wasn't clicking. The ring rust, you name it. Everyone was fucking calling it.
That was.
Everyone was calling it. And look at him now. I mean, it's not even a question anymore. He just had to shake it off. You know, literally, he just had to get out there, get some reps under his belt. I still think they made the right decision during that buildup to have him lose that match that they did. And I think look at him now. Now he's back to Adam Cole. Daniel Garcia is continuing his incredible TNT title reign. And
how
Adam
weird
Cole
is that? We
need
to have him cleansed by a bad loss, basically, in order to get back to Adam Cole. Essentially, it's storyline. That's essentially what had to happen. You know what I mean? Like, that's
because I believe
you don't
it was
see
the
that
buddy
often
match.
In wrestling, right? Like, usually you have to build up to a win to get somebody's mojo back. He did the opposite with Adam Cole, and it worked. So I think that shows the versatility of a wrestler like Adam Cole.
Absolutely, and he when he won that match over Buddy. Everyone and their cousin was just like, yeah, I don't know. Buddy was kind of on the, ugh, Adam probably shouldn't have won there. Didn't look too great. But look at him now. Now he's back to Adam Cole. We can all rejoice. And our boy has risen. So, all right. That being said, we got a little bit of news today. Nothing crazy. I just want to mention this Mike Bailey quote where he told Bleacher Report that this was his time to step up and make it to the big leagues. And he thinks, I think my biggest accomplishment in pro wrestling and in life, to be honest, is making every single year better than the last. It was time for me to step up and make it to the big leagues. And AEW's were the best wrestle. And in my opinion, it's where I belong. Couldn't agree more with you, Bailey. I really think you are perfect for AEW. And I think everyone that is fans of AEW and that's watching a show like this, that's they're in that. If your love for AEW is so deep that you're watching a podcast like ours, I know damn well you like someone like Mike Bailey showing up on your TV. Dude, how does it make you feel knowing that he feels like this? Yeah,
This makes me feel good, first of all. I'll answer your question. I won't just barrel past your question. This makes me feel really good. I'm so glad that he feels the same way that we do about him. Because you just never know, especially when it takes as long as it did. Like, we don't know the reasons why. Maybe it was just negotiations. Maybe it was trying to get visas, whatever it was, right? Regardless of the circumstances, extenuating or otherwise. it makes me really excited to see what he's going to do. We've already seen what he's done a little bit, and it looks insane. So if it's the pace we continue at, a la Will Ospreay, then we're just going to be off to the races, and we'll just see where we end up, right? So my bold prediction, within 1 year from now, this man will be a mid-card champion in AEW, without question.
Ooh, okay.
Within a year, because they're going to realize what they have in him, because he's going to continue to go out there, and he's going to get the same level of reaction. Because I just don't see this guy slowing down. I really don't.
I got to say, I'm with you. I don't see him slowing down either.
If he gets hurt, that's the only thing I could see him. And so I don't want to predict that. But that's the only thing I could see.
Sometimes it's like Ricochet,
him.
Where it's just, you can tell. It's just meant to be for AEW. Like, he is just meant to be.
So. Yeah, so that's my bold prediction. I won't say which championship, because then it's like, you know, then I'll just be wrong about that part, and then everyone will be able to say, oh, you got it wrong. A mid-card championship. He's not going to be a world champion, but I could see him beating somebody, even the caliber of Okada, straight up. Like, I could see it happening.
Yeah, I could definitely see it happening. I wonder what we're going to do with him in the Owen Hart Cup. Like, we're getting a lot of stuff talking about that.
He should be
in
it. Obviously, he can't win it, because the idea is that you're going to have Will win it to go to All In or whatever, but I mean, assuming that
whatever
is the
whatever their current
idea.
Plan is, yeah.
If that is the idea, I mean, that to me seems like pretty easily to write, you know, even if it is Swerve's champion. Still, I mean, we've talked about it. During Swerve's last title reign, he had to beat Will to legitimize it. Do we have to go there again?
Yeah.
Will is at another peak of his fucking top level. We might have to, you know?
My God, when you talk about stuff like that, you're setting yourself up for good TV there.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
That is the definition of good shit, pal.
And we do need to run that patch back in that title reign. I'm sorry. Assuming Swerve does win it, which I'm assuming he does, then that is probably one of the matches you should run back because of how great it was. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Throwing it out there. Fuck it. It doesn't even have to be a title match. Eliminator. Let's go. Come on, Tony Khan. Book it.
Book it, coward. You know the vibe. Yeah. No, I do agree with that. And yeah, it's really cool to see these positive comments again. It's been nice the past few weeks to have some real positive comments, especially from people working within the company. Tony Khan commented on Camille's absence that he was on the Battleground podcast on Wednesday, and he was asked about Camille.
On our podcast.
I know, right? He said, "We don't know who attacked Camille, and the last time we saw her, she was attacked. We know she had a breakup with Mercedes in their business relationship. She's flourishing since then. She's done really well on her own, but Camille, we haven't seen her since she was attacked. When Camille does return to get payback for the attack, it'll be interesting to see who she goes after and what that was." So, yeah. So, acknowledging Camille exists, I think, is a good thing. As far as I know, and we've seen in coverage, she wasn't hurt. So, maybe she was just taking some time off. Who knows? There's a lot of stuff about that. This was announced.
I mean, that'd be a tough one to lose. I feel like we just got Megan Bain. I feel like we finally have enough big women to do like a big fatal four-way or something like that with them. And I mean, that would be unfortunate if we lost Camille. I don't know what the reasoning would be. Everything she did was great. So I'm really confused.
That's why it feels like she'll be back. She'll you know, maybe you can do her and Mariah May, right? Maybe Mariah was the one that attacked her and you come up with some fun reason why.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did have her get attacked and taken off TV. That's right. Yeah, I guess.
So
maybe she just needed some time off or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Saraya has been kind of teasing a big announcement, and a lot of people are speculating what this means, whether it's to promote the book. You never know. One of the quotes that came from this is, "I'm about to start a whole new life." She says she's ready to write a second book, and she's excited for people to learn about what's happening with her. And yeah, she's just excited. She's got a big announcement coming soon. Again, I don't know if we'll see Saraya in the ring again, but you never know. So, yeah.
I hope the announcement isn't "I'm going back to WWE" or something like that. Yeah. You know, like that would
either way, we'll have a follow up. So she signed for a year contract. What was it? Maybe November.
Yeah, so she wouldn't be leaving the company unless the announcement is I haven't been getting booked, and
September it was something like that. Yeah.
Even though I work less dates, I actually kind of want to work a little bit more than what I'm working right now, because that is the only problem with the people like that come on like her that say, "Oh, I'm going to come on and work less dates," you know, because of my previous injuries or whatever, or because I just don't want to work that schedule or whatever, right? Well, two things. One, I think you could probably get WWE to not have you work that schedule at this point. I don't think that'd be impossible for you to negotiate with your contract, right? But even if it wasn't, even if you still had to work those dates, I think at this point, she's so lost in the shuffle of this women's division. She's good, but she's not nearly as good as half of the women.
And no, I think she provides age, something, you know? Yeah.
So it's something different that she adds to a story. It's like you can look at the Britt Baker feud as a perfect example. Like, did it ever really get there in ring? At the last match, I think it did, but it took a couple for them to get there. So I think it's not even an in-ring ability thing. She's really talented. It's just, she's a little bit older at this point, and she needs to take herself a little bit more seriously, you know? She has to not go 100% balls to the wall every time. That's not something you could expect from any wrestler. And this is the thing I'll blow everybody's mind on. I bet Will Ospreay could probably go harder in matches, and so could Kenny Omega, but they're also aware of their limitations as physical beings, you know? Like, so they're like, maybe I don't jump off every cage.
I am a human.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's, you know, so, you know, do I think they ever impose those limitations on themselves to stop them from doing something? Absolutely not. Do I think that they still are quite aware of what they are regardless? Of course. That's why they're so amazing to watch, because they push those limits. But so I think any wrestler knows. And she knows where she's at in her career. So if she decided to retire and just start training people, would anybody really be against that? I mean, I think the nail in the coffin for this group was her brother getting released, right? Because that doesn't necessarily mean anything for her. She could still be back for the rest of this contract, right?
Yeah. But
I do think it felt like she's been on the way out for a while.
It's got to make you feel a certain type of way, right? It would have to.
No
matter if you understand it or not, it's going to make you feel a certain type of way.
Oh, yeah, he sucked and he never did anything, so I understand why they cut him. It still would make you think, man, you know, because she hasn't done anything in a while, right? So it's like, you know, and that's kind of the big telltale sign in AEW that you're about to be gone, is that you just don't get seen and not even mentioned for long periods of time. Like,
yeah, and also might make her feel like she's happy he got a chance, right? You just never know what someone's thinking, so. Yeah. All right. Do we have one more news? They revealed the date of Supercard of Honor, Friday, May 2nd. So they will no longer be doing the WrestleMania weekend. So, yeah, it's going to be its own thing from Atlantic City at the Boardwalk Hall. So Supercard of Honor on the poster. So it was worth noting. Sammy Guevara, Athena, Dustin Rhodes, Lee Moriarty, Chris Jericho, and Commander. So, okay. And then this is kind of fun. This has been breaking today, our last little bit of news here. And we saw them kind of experiment with Collision this week. And we've seen AEW experiment a lot. So it sounds like during the NHL playoffs, they're going to be trying some fucking different things. So this is a report coming to us from Andrew Zarian from Beyond the Bell. And it says they're looking at running a different experiment during the NHL playoffs, one that could involve a four-hour special. He said he spoke to someone a couple weeks ago, and they were telling me that these are experiments that Warner is willing to try. College basketball takes precedence, and NBA All-Star Weekend takes precedence. Rather than canceling the show, let's put it on a different time slot and see if we could do something with it. That kind of feels like a challenge in a way, right? Maybe you're going to attract different types of fans, and that is one of the big key things you always have to keep in mind. Well, there's another opportunity for this during the Stanley Cup, during the NHL playoffs. So listen, anything could change here. I've heard from two sides. There's going to be an opportunity to do something very big. It presented me as an opportunity for a four-hour special. It's still soft, but it could just be Dynamite followed by Collision. So genuinely a four-hour block. But, you know, he says he's been hearing positive stuff, brought up the ratings and internet chatter to them. It doesn't even resonate. The messaging on the internet's not even reasoning with these people, and they're in key positions there. So that's another comment. So I guess, but as we've seen, there's been a little bit of a change in that recently, it feels like. So yeah, more experimenting during the NHL playoffs. Here's what I'll say, just right off the bat. A four-hour show would be fucking insane, but there's one big way you could do this. They do those playoff games, right? Sometimes at like 2 p.m. If you were to start Dynamite at 5:30 to 6 and then run it to 10, they would probably do something like a Blood and Guts in that. They would make it a big fucking show. They would make it feel like a pay-per-view. This is what my gut tells me.
I almost kind of wish we'd saved the Kyle versus Will Steel, like Steel Cage match for that, because like
that not is the kind of thing they would do during this.
100%. We can build something up until, I mean, we got plenty of time, but, you know, so they could build something up between now and then. You know, maybe that's where the apex of of Hangman versus MJF goes down, you know, potentially.
Yeah, to me, this screams they would do one of their specials and make like a pay-per-view fucking vibe out of this. Or maybe they'll literally just do what they used to do with Rampage sometimes and just have your show end at 10 o'clock and Rampage starts at 11 or starts at 10, right? So they could just very well do that, how they blank the screen out. But yeah, what do you think of this? I mean, and I guess we can just top on that. This sounds that Warner Brothers is very happy.
I think I prefer this, as bad as it's going to be for like retaining of viewers, like probably about halfway through, you're going to lose most people, I would think.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have people dropping like flies. The beginning to end point, it'll be kind of funny.
100%. There'll probably be people that don't even realize it's a 4-hour block that are like, oh, that was a great Dynamite, and just turn it off, you know, like straight up, you know. But I mean, I'd rather this, though, a longer show. It's going to basically be a pay-per-view on TV, which is awesome, you know. And if they're smart, they make the matches that level of quality. It all depends on how close it is to an actual pay-per-view. That'll determine whether that happens or not, because we've had that situation before, like with, you know, Grand Slam Australia, where it should have been a pay-per-view, but just wasn't because of, you know, proximity or whatever. But, I don't know. I'm excited by this idea.
Yeah, right?
I really hope it doesn't just be like a 4-hour show of nonsense, because that could, I mean...
Yeah, no, that see, now you can get a little crazy, but yeah, that could get fucking... bad fast. I could get real just, oh god, 4 hours in a row of wrestling.
Well, I will say this, the two blocks of Collision, I mean, they were fine, but there was, you know, at least 20-30 minutes on both where it was just, all right, let's cut to the back, and they did that like three times each, and yeah. I'm like,
and maybe to other people this sounds like a nightmare, but to you and I, how we consume wrestling, some weeks we just watch it all in one sitting, so yes. For us it feels a little normal. I don't know. Either way, yeah. I thought that was funny to note, and keep an eye out for the scheduling stuff. So a lot of our news this week's just like stuff we're going to be following up on, but 100%. I feel like it's
news a lot of the time. I mean, news keeping... is a constantly revolving door, right? You know,
and social media is an ever moving site, so you might miss something, and that's what we're here for. We if something's worth us mentioning in news, that's why we do it. It's have fun little talks about it. But that being said, Duke, we got AEW Dynamite this week. Stuck in one of those
like automatic revolving doors before.
No, but
it's not fun. Let me tell you,
I was in one where I had a little kid just fucking kept pushing it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like he thought he was pushing it automatically.
Yeah, he's just running, having a good time, and I was kind of trapped in the vortex.
Oh no, yeah, that is tough.
It was pretty funny.
But, you had to like run to keep up.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little fucker.
It was pretty good. Jesus, I hadn't thought about that in forever. Well, I guess you take care of Dynamite, where we had a blizzard and John Moxley Indeed. Drove 12 hours.
We had a blizzard and also impaled. We had bad weather. Anyway, yeah, so that being said, let's get to the top of the show. And what have we here? It's an International Championship Fatal 4-Way match. Mark Davis, Orange Cassidy, Speedball, Mike Bailey, and Ricochet all taking on each other. And they pushed the fucking pace in this one, man. What a fun match. Speedball still stands out as a fucking star in this match of absolute fucking studs in the company. Well, I mean, Mark Davis. Maybe Mark Davis is getting there, I think. I think we were initially a little bit like, I don't know about him in singles. I think this match solidified it for me, dude. I think he's going to do just fine, Charlie. Honestly.
Well, it's more like, or less, it's not are we unsure of him getting there.
Out of a tag
team, right? It's will he be able to?
Yes.
Because we've never seen it.
Correct. And now we've seen it a little bit.
Unless you're into the independent scene in Australia, you probably haven't seen it either.
That's true.
People watching. So.
That's true. I mean, and if you are in Australia as a wrestling man, you might not have seen. According to him, if you listen to what he said on AEW, like the Australian wrestling scene is really small and niche. Like you have to like know somebody to even get out of there. You know, like so. You know, the fact that they met Will was probably like the best thing that ever happened to these two guys' careers. If we're being honest, the fact that Buddy ever made it out is insane. You know, like I mean, to be honest with you, Buddy was probably the one he was winning world championships from, right? But still, like, you know, like, yeah, even no, so, literally. You know, we talk about it, he's like the Australian Kenny Omega, if you will, if even such a thing exists. But yeah, I mean, I still think Speedball stood out as like the star here, though, which I think when that's what you're doing. The other thing I noted is all the elements here worked really well. I think Mark Davis added that right amount of like meat, if you will. Orange Cassidy was your excitement. Ricochet was doing insanity and trying to cheat and stuff like that, you know. How do you cheat in a fatal four-way? He found ways, you know, like, but yeah, no, I mean, like,
it's innovative shit though.
Yeah. 100%. I thought it was a lightning fucking way to open the show. That's the way I described it. Oh my God, there was a 2.99 that Davis got at one point. I think it was Davis was the one that kicked out of it. That was just like, I thought match was over for sure. And like, he just kicks out. There's a couple times actually throughout a lot of the matches on the shows that were like, just very well paced and very well, what's the word I'm looking for here? Just like the, everything felt like it slotted in right perfectly.
Really
like, sometimes
flow.
Wrestling can be like, oh, okay, we have 2 minutes of selling here. We're laying out, you know? And other times it can feel like they're popping right back up right at the right moment and nothing ever feels like out of place. The cells are all perfectly timed out, but it doesn't feel like we're spending too much time on the mat, so on and so forth. You know what I mean? Like, if that makes any sense. I will say the only thing, and I said this to you earlier before we started the show, I don't know, and this is kind of the thing that prevented it from being my favorite, because this might have been better in-ring quality than Danny versus Adam Cole, but I do think that the ending of this match kind of really upset me a little bit, because in my mind, we're doing this to set up a fatal four-way to crown a number one contender, right?
Yep.
We crowned two. So...
yeah, even if you say it out loud like that, it's a little bit like, what the...
Yeah, so
you did Ricochet now?
Cheats to find you know, uses the ropes to get leverage on the pin that was already being made by Speedball. And so Speedball and Ricochet are declared the winners. Now, in my mind, this writes itself really easily. You just have a singles match, but instead they announce them as both the winners. And when you do that, usually that's not the plan. Now, they could still pivot, and God, I hope that they do, because we have like a week or two. But at this point, it seems like the plan is a triple threat. Now, I'm not saying that that triple threat won't be banger, right? The triple threat last year with the Ricochet, Will Ospreay, and was it Takeshita? Of course, right? But, I mean, or sorry, that was Kyle, I think. But either way, the point is, like, they've done triple threats before. I think Ricochet had one with Will as well, to be honest with you. I think there was two. Anyway, the point is, this will be a good match. It's just that it's going to feel like it should have been one of the two of them versus Kenny. So my hope is that they just pivot and make it one of the two of them versus Kenny. That's my only hope, but I don't know that that's going to happen because we only have a couple weeks till the pay-per-view. So it's getting close, but AEW does love to last-minute add stuff or change stuff, so we'll see. But yeah, I mean, your thoughts, I mean, the match itself was great, so I'm sure you'll have good things to say about that, but the finish and everything.
Yeah. We're kind of on the opposite end here. Cause I'm hoping it is the triple threat. I think that's going to be absolute fucking stellar. And that's kind of what I'm rooting for it to be. I think it'll be fun to have both Ricochet and Speedball on the pay-per-view. I think that's probably the main thing I'm leaning for right now is that we do that. Cause I think, I don't know if there's going to be enough time for both of them to get the singles match.
I think this is just so Speedball doesn't lose this match. Ricochet's probably getting pinned, right? Like, that's the only thing I can take away from this. And if Speedball's getting pinned, what?
It's getting pinned by Kenny Omega, though, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I mean, it's his first pay-per-view match, and it's only going to be like his third match in the company, probably. Like, I doubt it. I don't think Speedball's winning.
If they got cold feet about mixing up these fucking titles and they want to keep all three separate, well, you're probably not having Kenny Omega go into All In with that title. So it's going to give you options. No, I think this is just going to be a classic AEW three-way match that's going to be an absolute fucking steezmeister.
If Speedball wins that title, I might actually do the robot straight up.
I probably would too. And if Ricochet did, I'd probably hit the robot because I don't see that happening, at least today. You know, we're what, 2 weeks out from the show? That show's coming up fucking fast. Holy shit.
This one, since this happens in this section right before the summer, we always get these pay-per-views come hot and heavy, and we're not ready for them.
Yeah. But then we'll get our build to Double or Nothing and then All In. So it's going to be like blink and, holy shit, it's here. The biggest show of the summer, you know? So, yeah, I thought the match was really, really good. I am with you on the ending. I think it was clever. I'll give him that. I think there's other ways you could have done it.
I tell you the biggest reason why I hate it, and this is gonna sound so nitpicky, but I hate the idea that this could have been something that anybody did ever, and nobody ever has. Like, what?
Makes every wrestler look dumb, or makes Ricochet look like the smartest guy in the building, so, yeah. You know, usually you
would like, just... I need Tony Khan to send out, well, we can't send out Christopher Daniels because he's dead, but, you know, like, we'll send out somebody like Christopher Daniels and be like, okay, that was fine, Ricochet. But never again. That's a new rule. You can't pin somebody that's already being pinned.
Yeah.
No way.
You know, stuff like that, it would all depend on the feud. Because if all depend on, you know, who's ever booking it. Cause I could see a scenario totally where they just have them that same night, just do the match anyways. So yeah, I mean, that's going to be very selective on, who's booking the darn show there, buddy.
I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think mostly, like, I want there to just be more consistency to the match results. Because, like, I know this is unrealistic, but, like, we had it for a while with AEW, and it felt so beautiful, where we just don't have DQ finishes and stuff like that. And we don't have as many shenanigans. We shenan when we must, but other than that, we leave it on the table as an option. It just makes every match more exciting because anything could happen, but you're not expecting it to happen every match. And I do find myself expecting interference with the Death Riders. And a lot of times when it's not even the Death Riders, I feel like AEW has gotten to that like WWE level of, we know exactly what's going to happen. Somebody's going to come out. They're going to cut a promo, yap for a few minutes. It's going to be okay. Maybe good, depending on who's yapping, right? And then they're going to come out and they're going to yap at them for a few minutes. And then you're going to notice that their faction is notoriously absent from this conversation, and then they're going to attack them. I mean, like, and that even works that way with matches. They're going to have their match. They may even cut a promo after, and then they're going to get attacked. And it's like, it's at this point, I would like for there to be, like, one thing that Swerve did really well when he was a heel was he found ways to get under people's skin that he didn't even have to be at the goddamn building for his, you know, his stories to be effective. Not everyone can be Swerve Strickland, but everybody can tell unique stories. And I really do want to see them try and do some more interesting stuff like that, because it does feel like we're getting to the point where it is a little like we know
but if we're,
how these things are going to go, you know?
Yeah. Like, and I'll tell you this, if we're doing interesting, I thought this was an interesting pin. And like you said, you've never seen someone do this, and it makes every other wrestler, like, if they're going to come up with a way to do. So here's the way we got to look at it. No matter what, it's the three-way match on pay-per-view, right? How do we do this? Either have them get to a finals match and you call a fucking draw, which I think would have been even sillier if you have them draw against each other. Because they've done that Adam Cole fucking MJF finish a couple times, and it already feels like we can't do that again, especially if we're doing a draw this week. They did a draw. I mean, if you're at the show, they did a draw 2 hours later, right? So I don't know. I think that it was kind of an innovative way to get the three-way. Look, and if we wanted to have a match next week, it's a one-on-one, and then we do this whole thing again, that sure, that'd be fine. But yeah, I think they had an end game in mind, and it was, we need to keep Ricochet relevant while he's, you know, and how are we going to do that? Oh, we're going to have him go for a title right away. Okay. And how do we debut Mike Bailey, and we need to get him on the pay-per-view? Oh, we're going to have a wrestle with Kenny Omega. It's like, yeah, I'm Kenny Omega. I haven't wrestled Ricochet or Mike Bailey at AEW yet. Let's fucking do it. That's my guess what happened, but I really don't know. I mean, it could just be a scenario where they are going to have a match in 2 weeks and it ends up being Ricochet versus Kenny or vice versa. So
I had in my head that it just didn't seem like they were going to go with any of the other contenders in this, because Ricochet had just lost a big massive feud, you know? And I thought maybe that was going to be in his own, you know, be in his head or whatever. Like, there was going to be some impact from that. But I don't know. I just, in my head, I thought, you know, this is going to be how we, like, show off what Mike Bailey can do. And maybe that would have been a little short-sighted to do it that way, because then, you know, he loses and then, you know, where do you go from there, right? But, like, I don't know. I just don't know how we get back to this match, this singles match of him versus Kenny, which I do want to see at some point. Unless he wins the match or something like that. So, like, yeah, and I really wanted to see that match, because I think that match could be a top, like, 10 match of all time, potentially. You know, like, I mean, which I know people are gonna be like, what? No, trust me, when you put these two against each other, it's gonna be fucking magic. It's gonna be magic in the triple threat, but when you put them, like, against each other, I don't even think people realize the level of insanity that you're gonna see. Because there's parts of Kenny's arsenal that he doesn't pull out all the time. And there's things that would be very... It would match the style of Speedball in a lot of ways that I think we'd be fucking losing Speedball. Our minds. That, like, I don't really see Kenny throw kicks like that crazy, but I feel like he knows how, you know? Like, I feel like he did in that Danielson match, you know? Like, I feel like yep. He probably does know how to do it. It's just not the arsenal that he likes to necessarily use, you know? But even if he can't, he can throw some knees, so I think we'll be all right, you know? Like, Yeah, it'll be fun either way. So I'm going to watch it regardless. So, you know, and I'm going to be fucking losing my mind the whole time. I just, you know, when I feel this way, I have to let people know. So.
Hundo P.
All right. So we had a Dynasty video package, promo video for the Hurt Syndicate. This is actually, and I know this is going to sound crazy, I think this was actually the weakest promo video they've done for the Hurt Syndicate. I don't know if it was bad. It just, it didn't really... It was fine. Just didn't really do anything for me, you know? I think we need to have them defend the titles again soon. And it'll be on the pay-per-view, so I'm sure. But, like, I do think maybe they need to show up and pick their target next week or something, you know? That might be the move. Have them show up and decide who they're facing. Even if it's as simple as MVP comes out and says, yeah, we need new contenders. Because right now, the only thing they're really doing is...
I'm in with that.
Doing stuff with MJF, so...
Exactly, the storylines of MJF right now.
Yeah, that's the tough part. We're not going to have him go for those titles, right? So, I mean, I guess they could, but I doubt it. Who's going to be his partner? You know what I mean? Like, you know, so. Yeah. MJF and Danhausen for the tag team titles. Let's go. All right. imagine that tag team. Yeah, we talked about Mercedes Moné versus Billy Starks for the TBS Championship. Phenomenal match. We had the Outrunners footage of them hanging out with the Omaha Mavericks before their NCAA tournament games. Shout out the Outrunners. Fucking absolute legends. Chilling out on SportsCenter. The Outrunners are going to become the most famous wrestlers in AEW by absolute accident, and it's hilarious. like, and dude, legitimate athletes, no offense to the people they went and hung out with before, but legitimate athletes actually, like getting fired up by these guys makes me so fucking happy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care if they're even mimicking it, bro. It looks awesome, and it looks sick, and they're all having a great time. You see the pop from that fucking group of fucking athletes when they fucking did the goddamn elbow drop on the trash can, bro? Are you kidding me? Come on, dude. Come on, man.
Yeah.
MJF, we had a recap of the offer made to him by MVP. He responds and says, you know, it's all well and good, but he's the only one that can really become the next AEW World Champion. Says he's going to give us his answer next week about the Hurt Syndicate and that he's going to be done with the crybaby, you know, Max. Basically, he's done bitching and crying, basically. So good stuff from MJF. You know, MJF is very smart. I don't know if he's in any way in control of how much TV time he gets, but if he is, or even if it's not him, but he has an, I'm sure he has an influence on it, right? Like, if he wants more, I'm sure he can get it.
Yeah.
He knows when not to use it up more. This was exactly the length that it needed to be for him to get across the message that he wanted to. So I'm down with that. He doesn't need to be a 20-minute promo with this guy every time, you know? Although I do enjoy them. John Moxley took on Cope in a street fight. All right, let's talk about this insanity. All right. They started in the back and they brawled and battled into the arena. We had an evil kendo stick. That's the only way I can describe it. I mean, it was a black-colored kendo stick. So, I mean... It's either supposed to be a Death Rider's kendo stick or like a demonic one. That's the only way I can take that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's literally spray painted black. There's only one real message you can take away from that, which is that it's supposed to be the bad guy kendo stick, if you will. At least in terms of, like, if we're talking like visual metaphor. I don't know if that's even the right word, but people know what I'm trying to get at here. Yeah, they battled in the crowd for a bit, which honestly kind of killed the pace of the match for about 5 minutes. I won't even lie to you. I was just sitting here like, all right, get back to the ring, please. You know, I'm not even kidding. That's exactly what I was thinking in my head. I was like, all right, there's no way they put any weapons out there in the crowd that some random guy could just bean the guy next to him with. So they're doing nothing out here, you know, like anyway, we had a paradigm shift onto the table, which I called it a paradigm shift of doom, but it's only because the table didn't break. So shout out the table. So, all right, let's talk about the spot. So Spike gets pulled out from underneath the ring, sat down on the ring, and a suplex onto Spike might be the gnarliest thing I've seen, at least certainly this year in AEW. So I remember we had a conversation about Spike a while ago. It's like, is this thing actually as dangerous as it looks? The answer to that question is quite definitively yes, Charlie.
Yes, it is.
We didn't know, because Adam Copeland's a smart guy, so he could have had some... I'm not saying it was rubber. It could have been way less dangerous than it looks, though. Nope, Adam Copeland just stuck some nails in a fucking board. So, Jon Moxley's back is never going to be the same. That's the only way... I mean, remember how Darby Allin looked after he went through that glass table? and how like he hasn't really worn, you know, no shirts since then a lot of times, you know, unless he's covered in paint or whatever. I think there's a reason for that. I think he looks probably permanently scarred on his back from now on. You know, I might be wrong about the Darby Allin thing, but the point is, like, I wouldn't be surprised if John Moxley didn't wrestle out of a shirt for a while, you know, because that's going to look pretty bad. But gnarly spot. So shout out John for having the balls to take it. I mean, nobody else in this company would.
Yeah.
I don't even know if Darby Allin would do this. Darby Allin would probably do it. But he's probably like the only one. And maybe like a 65-year-old Sting would do it. But then he'd die, so it would be really sad, you know? Yeah, then Yuta gets involved. He hits like a Busaiko knee. And then the rest of the Death Riders then arrive not long after that. They are like threatening to pull the thing out. Finally do it. That's probably the gnarliest spot of all of it, is just them yanking it out of the back. Ugh. FTR then make the save, or at least attempt to. Dax hit a pile driver on Mox. They hit a spear through the table in the corner. Marina Shafir then gets involved. Willow also. Patriarchy also got involved. This is the point where I was like, Jesus Christ, we're so overbooked at this point that it's where so many people are involved. But
that's kind of been Coke the story.
Put to sleep by the bulldog choke.
Eventually return.
And I guess the significant thing after him getting choked out, Moxley leaves. Everybody leaves except for Dax and Cash, and they're like about to help Cope back to his feet, and Dax refuses to do it. And I've been talking about possible potential heel turns with different people for a while, right? FTR has been one I've been sniffing for quite some time. It's been feeling like it's been coming, and I think Dax might have just finally took the step. It may not be right away. It may not be immediate, but this is the first crack we've seen in Dax since they became world champions a few years ago. So I would like to see this go somewhere. I think Dax and Cash could really do something really interesting, especially if even they maybe run a little singles feud within themselves to, you know, because maybe Dax sees things one way and Cash sees them another, and they need to work it out in the ring, you know? And I would be okay with that. I don't want him turning on Cash at the end. I want them to stay together, but I mean, maybe they, you know, maybe I don't know what you do, but you have a scenario where you can set them up to be bad guys, or at least maybe not good guys anymore. Certainly, you know, certainly maybe more of that tweener sort of area. Good stuff. We had a Bandido promo backstage. Hold on.
I got to talk about the match. The world title match. I gotta talk about the world title match.
Do you though? I mean,
dude, this was absolutely incredible. This is definitive proof why Jon Moxley is the ace of AEW. He drove 12 hours. Like, everyone's been covering this fucking story. He drove 12 hours. His flight got delayed. He hops in a car, makes the fucking trip to go out there and just start fucking wailing out there with Cope. This was everything it needed to be. They brought the entire story full circle, including teeing us up for Edge and Christian against FTR. That is the end goal of all of this. I've been saying over and over, Edge and Christian will be reuniting. Look for All In. They just teed it up because they're going to be facing FTR. Patriarchy got out there. The entire story went full circle. And this was fucking awesome. Straight up, this was awesome. This is what they needed. Definitive ending. Cope, you know, choked out, took the pin, whatever the hell you want to say. It's got a definitive ending. Moxley now takes his case. He's got his cronies back. And Swerve's going to defy them all and become new champion in like 2 or 3 weeks. But the big question that they kept posing to us, is this Cope's last chance at the world championship? And I do think it is.
I don't think we're going to see him.
You what?
Press X. I do think he will get a shot again. I still think he's going to win it at some point. I've never wavered in that belief. I do believe toward the end of his run in AEW, which might be like a couple of years from now, or maybe 6 months from now, whenever that comes around, like similar to Bryan Danielson, I do think he will win it because I do think they want that name in their record books. I mean, I'd be shocked. They did it with Sting in his last match. I mean, there's no way that we don't. I'm not saying this guy's on the level of Sting, but for a lot of people, he's pretty up there.
I think he'll win the tag titles this year. I do think he's going to be a champion this year.
I just want the tag titles to become the championship that we just throw on the legends when they're on their way out. That just feels like that feels super.
If the story calls for it, this just everyone knew it. This wasn't the time, and it maybe if they had done it 3 months ago post Orange Cassidy and they didn't drag this out, maybe that could have been it, but he wasn't healthy. He wasn't there. He wasn't able to. So, because they've set it up perfectly for Swerve, which is Mr. AEW at this point. And maybe a heel cope against Swerve could be fun too. So maybe he is the match at Double or Nothing. So very well could be. But yeah, I thought how much people popped for Willow and Marina. Let's just do that match at Dynasty. We need to get Marina back in the ring.
This hasn't been used. I mean, they started it off as a TV view between just the two of them, and then it worked its way into the... And it's something that was brilliant, because then it worked its way... Like, this was just something Marina just decided to do. It wasn't even a Death Rider thing. Like, maybe Moxley told her to do it, but it wasn't like a Death Rider main objective. It just took her out. And then she started taking them out as a response. So, like...
The crowd wants it!
The interplay with that was good, and this is organic. You should run with it. At least throw it on a pre-show at the minimum, but definitely put it on the main show. What the hell are we doing?
I mean, what'd you think of the patriarchy working without Cage?
That makes sense, because I mean, Christian wouldn't want to get hurt if he wants another title shot, right? So he's gonna send his goons.
Is this gonna be a scenario where Christian brings them to see the light, or they turn on them and Christian and Cope fight Sabian and Nick Wayne first?
I would think that if they wanted, I mean, it all depends on what they want to do. I would think that, based on the last interaction that the group had, that Sabian and Wayne would not be super excited about him going back to his old friend when he's supposed to be focused on turning them into stars or whatever. It all depends on how they want to play that, though. They might consider it a good move. It really just depends on how you want to frame that.
Because I think Christian going to the light side also doubles down more if it is with him and Cope.
See, I think it's FTR. More likely that Cope's going to the dark than Christian coming to the light.
I would agree, but the thing with Dax, that's not a babyface.
That is true. I'm with you. It really depends on how, because they've threatened an SVR heel turn before in this run of babyface, and it didn't end up going. So, you know, like, it's, I want to say that because I want to see heel FTR again, because I think given the actual opportunity to do something with that in AEW, they could really do some really cool shit, you know? But they also could just not pull the trigger on that, and they could decide to go the other way. And that's the unique thing about this feud, is it's kind of like when Hangman and MJF was first discussed, right? It's like, should we really have Hangman be the heel in that? You know, is that really going to work? MJF isn't really in a position to do that. Well, neither was he in a position to be a babyface, so there was a little bit of work to do there either way, no matter how you were going to slice that feud. It's kind of similar here. You either have to turn Christian, you have to turn Cope, or you have to turn FTR and then turn Christian, or, you know, like one of the two. Like, or three or four. There's multiple ways you have to go about this, and so we can get there. There are just some steps you have to get through.
Well, we just had a little bit of breaking news.
Oh, shit.
So, good news. From the Tokyo Sports, Mina Shirakawa is expected to leave at the end of March and move overseas to join AEW. So it sounds like Mina is heading to AEW perfectly.
So I guess you could say Mina is coming.
Yeah, Mina is coming. So that's some pretty fucking awesome news. Just, I guess, quick thoughts on that before we finish, get back into Dynamite.
It's a huge signing. I mean, it's probably like, you know, if we're talking about signings of people that we've brought in, I would say Watanabe, and maybe a couple of the other women that Mercedes have faced all could easily slot in AEW. And I think,
mm-hmm.
And this is the one that we needed to probably clean up because of the connections to Mariah. She was basically on AEW television for months. I mean, like, and it was on and off, but then she actually was in a feud with both Mariah and Mercedes. So, you know, like, she feels like they needed to tie that up at some point. You know, we needed to, because that's history in AEW. So we need to at least have more so that it feels like it's like, this is the era where we had, you know,
just more depth to this incredible women's division. Oh, geez.
Yeah, it is interesting because I was surprised that we hadn't heard any, like, even rumblings of this, but it must have been because they didn't want any accusations of tampering or something like that, so they didn't, like, sully the relationships in Japan. Because currently the working relationship that AEW has with both Stardom and New Japan is just so brilliant, and it feels like it makes so much sense, you know, like... So, yeah, this one's, I mean, just prepare for some great matches on AEW television. That's all I can tell you.
Absolutely.
All right, continuing on with the show. Bandido recapped his brother being beaten in front of his mother and sister. I actually thought this was a solid promo here. You know, Bandido, I wasn't sure. I was like, okay, I mean, you know, Lucha guys are hit or miss when it was with their level of English, you know? Like, it's just, it's all foreign wrestlers. You just never know, because when you wrestle against people that all speak your language, what's the point of learning English if you're never going to go to America or somewhere else where they're English speaking, right, to wrestle? Even if you do, I mean, I've heard wrestlers even say, for at least putting together a match, you don't even necessarily need to speak. You can do that through a translator, like 1,000,000%. So, which I think is crazy. I can't believe the level of trust that wrestlers have with each other that they can do that, right? But it's all about communication at that point, right? So, but Johnny TV interrupts, challenges into a match on Slam Dunk Sunday. And I was like, okay. I mean,
yeah.
I was hoping they'd get more time than they did, really, because I thought that could still be 10 years ago that match would slap. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure it did 10 years ago. You probably looked it up. I'd be shocked if those two hadn't met. You know, because that would have been right in that time when Johnny was on, like, the indies before he went back to the Fed temporarily, you know? So, Will Ospreay took on AR Fox. Kind of similar vibe here, you know, to what was going to go on later on. It's like flippy guy versus other flippy guy. AR Fox is really good, but it just wasn't long enough, you know? Will had to just get a quick win here, you know? Yep. So, it is, you know, it is what it is.
Unfortunately, it's just what AR Fox's role is. And
it's tough. He'll never be that guy, but we know how good he is. And so he could be like a trios champion or something. Like, we could totally see him doing that someday. And I maybe with Top Flight. I mean, I keep teasing it, so, you know.
We're doing heel FTR. They always like buddying up with a new third.
He could be it. And having a flippy guy as like their third guy kind of would be hilarious. You know what I mean? So, hey, I'm down. You know what I mean? We had Hangman Page said he's gonna enter the Owen Hart Cup to stop Swerve from being the champion. You know, Jesus Christ, is our end game Will versus fucking Adam Page? Jesus, is that the fucking end game?
I don't know, but they're teeing this thing up.
Is that round two match? Like, what are we doing? You know, like,
to be big.
So that's going to be this could be the most like banger Owen Hart year we've had. Certainly it's going to be in the women's division because I'm sorry, none of that bullshit about champions not being able to enter or anything like that, that we threw on our thing. Throw Athena and throw the world champ. And no, you can't throw the world champ. Throw everybody else in though. Like, just fuck it. Who cares? Cause we might as well have all the women. Because I've honestly
for a match at All In, it should be the biggest. It should be the biggest deal.
Should we have qualifying matches? Like, should it be like other, like, I know that's kind of lame, but like, should we have like
your qualifying matches is your resume throughout the year?
But should there be like one each? Like, should we just have one just to get people in the mood? You know, for the Owen Hart. Like, I don't know. Should be like two people that aren't going to win, but like, you know, like, I don't know. Like, last year it would have been like Queen Aminata versus Julia Hart or something like that. Could have been a match. You know what I mean? Like, we both don't think that they're going to win. But they're not going to win the tournament. But if they're in the tournament now, it's more interesting that they could win it, right? I don't know. We had the video package for Queen Aminata versus Julia Hart, which I was excited for because I was like, I can't believe we're actually having women just like face each other multiple times. And like, the feud's not even really that they don't like each other or anything. So they're just like, nah, I'm going to beat you. I'm better than you. What the hell? I like that.
It's a feud about exhibition matches, about trying. Yeah, literally.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that, we need that in wrestling. It is supposed to be a sport technically, so you know. Anyway, Mercedes backstage with I can't remember if it was Lexi or if it was Arcady or if it was, it might have been Renee, who knows, but Renee might have still been checking on John Moxley after the match, really.
Yeah, it was Renee. Don't know.
Was Renee. Okay, so I guess he was okay. Anyway, she says she thinks whoever trained Billy Starks sucks and doesn't know what they're doing. So basically soft calling out Athena here.
We love that out here.
Which, yeah, I hope that's not just she said that in the promo, hoping that Tony Khan would agree to it. Which I don't think she'd go into business to herself. But you know, but I would also do that if I wanted that match. So anyway.
It's not a coincidence. It was those two, Swerve and Darby Allin at the press conference when they announced All In.
Yes,
that's who he sees.
Shit,
as the future
how
of his
him
company.
Back into this? He's still supposed to be on fucking Everest, isn't he? Shit.
Yeah, Darby's doing his own thing. So
maybe that's what we'll do. We'll get a video package of him live from Everest. Actually, it would be kind of sick if he took a camera with him and just sent the footage in. That would be cool. I don't know if you... AEW has to have sent a camera crew with him,
right?
I think
they were teetering right on the point of Darby being a fucking main eventer, and now I worry when he comes back.
If he goes and climbs Everest and then comes back, he might be a main eventer. I'm just saying, you know?
I hope so.
I hope they sent at least a camera with him. Come on. It probably didn't. But yeah, maybe not operated by a human because we don't need to send them up a mountain, but like just have Darby take a camera with him or something. Maybe you can't. Maybe it freezes or something. No, wait, they have pictures from the top of Everest, right? Yeah, no, I'm sure they do. Anyway, get a nice camera. I don't know. Megan Bain took on Chris Statlander. I mean, this was a great match. Tony Storm was on commentary. And, you know, we mentioned Camille earlier, so I guess it's kind of appropriate, especially if she ends up not being back for a while. But I said this is basically a solid little brick house match, basically. We had some fucking, some meaty women get in there, you know? Megan Bain still obviously looked more more dominant here. And I actually wrote that down in my notes at this point. I actually think that's the next match I want to see for Megan Bain is Camille. So if we can get that to happen anytime soon, I'm 100%
down. Give me what I want.
You know?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so that would be cool. See her collide with the Megasus. Tony Storm was diabolical on commentary here. So many fucking ridiculous things that she just says that it gets away
what
with.
Makes you think?
Yeah. And there's some good old meat slappage going on in this match, you know? Just hitting the shit out of each other. Penelope got yeeted by the ref. Statlander got tossed into the champ. So, I don't know, maybe there's going to be a match there, potentially, because, you
ooh,
know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's what usually happens in wrestling. You know, Tony will probably make a comment about it, like, hey, Stat, stay out of my way, or something like that. And then Stat will be like, what the hell, man? I was tossed into you. What do you mean? But, yeah. And then there was a brawl after the match with Tony. And I like them making the only person that's been able to stand up to Megan Bain straight up in a fisticuff so far has been Tony Storm. That makes sense. That checks out. Would Mariah May also probably stand a chance? I mean, if we're using power scaling, like if we're using an anime reference of power scaling here, or I guess just like a, you know, fictional reference here. I mean, if she scales to Tony Storm and Tony Storm scales to Megan Bain,
yeah.
Not saying she could beat Megan Bain, but she should be able to at least throw hands with her, right? So, you know, if she can throw hands with someone that can throw hands with her, that's usually how you kind of like, you know, that doesn't always work out that way. Like, I don't think, like, if Conor McGregor fought, I don't know, some jobber that on the street that picked a fight with, you know, I don't know, John Jones. I don't think beating that guy means he's beating John Jones, right? But
no,
you know, but if he scrapped with John Jones, he's definitely beating the guy that, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if he survived 5 minutes with John Jones, he's probably killing the other guy, right? So anyway, that being said, it's a good match. I really liked it. And that takes us to the end of Dynamite, I believe. I don't believe there was anything else after that. I believe that was the final match of the show. And shout out to women getting the main event on Dynamite. It was a really fun show.
Well earned, and it's kicking ass. It's kicking ass. So, yeah, let's jump into Collision, our double show this week. We already covered the big opener. Max is in the ring for his open challenge. He had a busy schedule, unlike his former partner. Crowd's chanting for Bowens. Said he's gone and never coming back. Hook came out and the match is on. I saw Anthony Bowens posting on Blue Sky. He's been ripping some cards.
He's pulling cards, bro. He pulled a Dude. Mike Trout. Bro's fucking going nutty.
Anthony Bowen, one of us. One of us! One of us! Hook came out and the match is on. Hook whoops his ass. GG's. Queen Aminata is Lexi Nair's guest. She's interrupted by Serena Deeb, who bore a gift. All 1,000 of her holds in a binder.
The Book of 1,000 Holds is what I called this in my notes.
I'm fucking down. She wanted Aminata to study
these
moves.
That's like the Atreides fucking family history. That's like fucking sacred knowledge.
It is. Aminata declined, said she could win this match on her own. Deeb wondering like, huh, what's all that going on? We have Julia Hart take on and defeat Queen Aminata. And she kind of just takes care of business relatively quickly, it felt like. A little weird compared
match?
To their...
I mean, maybe, I guess they're not done with each other. If we're going to, I mean, you know, we could just declare this a best of seven. I've said that it could have been, and I've said this about multiple things. I understand Tony Khan's reluctance because of how insane that trio's feud was. I get it.
And he came out of the gate calling it a best of seven, so...
I know, and that's what's tough, because you would assume he would have the same, he would do it the same way, right? So,
yeah.
I would love, but I don't see why, because the original best of seven that we all look back to, the Cesaro and Sheamus, you know, not that that was the first one ever, but the modern it's just in the same way that the reinvention of the gauntlet match in modern day was done by Kofi.
That was
Kingston.
Such a big deal on American wrestling television.
Yes. To do something like that in a way like that, just like I said, that's why I compared it to the Kofi thing. Because yes, it made Kofi. Because yes, did the bar ever become as big as Kofi Mania? No, the bar was one of the top tag teams in WWE for multiple years, though. So certainly one of the most over. And there's a reason why they just held both championships on both shows for a while. You know what I mean? Like
absolutely,
both, like the individual ones. So because that gimmick just came together perfectly. I'm not saying they should be a tag team, although I did put that tag team question mark in my notes, but. Because of how much chemistry the two of them have. But I do think there's potential for anybody to be able to do this, but I think this is kind of feels like it's setting itself up. I mean, they just keep having good matches, and this one was a little short. And so
this and a clunky finish here. Let's get into this finish.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about
so,
it.
So
yeah.
Queen Aminata hits her with a forearm and she goes for the off with her head. But Hart moves and stacks her up for the win, which on paper I'm fine. It was just a little clunky.
You know, so, ideally, if she just like instantly snaps into the pin, it probably looks a little bit more clean, but it just looked a little weird.
Yeah, but, you know, we got some good stuff in the match. Queen Aminata, one of our four pillars, of course. So it's just like, you know, I was a little surprised that it went this route. I thought with the advertising and all that, you know, but we just had a 20-minute match. So maybe, you know, this is more of a Rampage
book style
show. It's also
tough. These were an hour each. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And there was commercials cut in between the whole thing. So it was
It was
I mean,
treated like Rampage.
Tough,
you had
right?
three matches plus a bonus one. And that was it. So we had Lexi Nair's get another interview time. She's got Harley Cameron. She asked her about the Lucha Showcase match tomorrow night. She said she would hop on commentary for that match after her match. She asked her about the rumors about the mysterious luchadora, Harley Graham, and she screamed, "Feel the wrath!" and ran away. Enigmatic.
Harley Graham.
The goat. Harley, it might just be the goat. Kinosuke and the Murder Machines take on and defeat Mark Briscoe, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Rocky Romero. I wrote high
Rocky
energy.
Rocky Romero.
High energy, fun, and, you know, Don Callis family. Still relevant all these time later, post fucking Kenny Omega. No one, there was skepticism post Kenny Omega. Like, is anyone going to care about the Don Callis family?
I think there was skepticism, and then there was skepticism even more so post Will Ospreay, because it was one thing to get Will, and then now. But the thing is, you know, they have Kyle now, so it's like each time.
And
I'll say this: I think Kenny, Will are like a legacy, right? In the same way that Brian. I would say Brian goes into Danny, goes into potentially whoever Danny's going to have be next, or maybe Nigel and then Danny, depending on how you want to look at things, like who is like the next in line or whatever. But like, I think that Kenny draws a direct line to Will. And I think at this point, Will draws a direct line to Kyle. And I think Kyle is the next in that legacy of being one of the best in the world. And definitely, certainly in the style that him, Kenny, and Will wrestle.
So, I agree with the analogy you used for it being Kyle, but the top dog is Kinosuke in the group.
That's true, but I think...
Like, maybe
I think,
Kinosuke is the Kenny and Kyle is the Will. And maybe it's a scenario similar to that almost, but they're just teamed up at the same time now.
That's fair.
He is the top guy of this group.
No, but, I agree with you. But I feel like in the way that, like... You know, well, let's be honest, though. There was a period where there was no Kyle and there was a Kinosuke in this group, and it just didn't work. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not Kinosuke's fault. They just weren't using him. I mean, they didn't have him have music. They had him with goons because it wasn't the group that they have now. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, there was a period where even Kinosuke wasn't connecting with the crowd despite his insanity in the ring. So I do think that Kyle was an element that added back to this that made people interested in the Don Callis family again. I'm not even kidding.
It feels a little bit like Kinosuke and Powerhouse Hobbs are destined to dance forever.
I don't
know if they've directly just been like asserting that more, because they really should. Like, these guys have been intertwined for so long.
I've been expecting them to put it as one of the title matches on a pay-per-view, but it's never happened. Yeah. So, you
well,
know.
No, they did for World's End. But do it again.
Yeah, I guess you're right. They did. I'm expecting it to be like a long-term thing. It's weird. They never commit to anything for more than a month or two with Hobbs. I mean, he's been in a feud, but he's not been
fighting. Especially with
for
Hobbs and Takeshita,
right?
Because this is I mean, you go back, they when they were tagging last year, and they had, to date, one of the best Dynamite main event fucking matches with how great it was with those guys facing Sting and Darby. Like, they fully fucking sent it. And it's just like, it's weird. It is very strange how they've danced forever, yet it doesn't feel like it's acknowledged. But either way, it worked again here.
Maybe there's a sneak into a dynasty. I don't know. Possibly.
I'd love it. It makes sense, too, because that's where we're at. But yeah, I mean, this was just, you know, one of our top mid-card guys with a merging tag team facing off just a bunch of guys that are kind of a little bit lost in the shuffle, a little bit treated, you know, Hobbs is treated very, very, you know, in terms of he's a big guy, so they treat him well.
But he's almost too protected sometimes, though. Like, he'll be, you know, dominant, and then off TV for a while, which is almost a little too protected. They did it with Wardlow sometimes, too, you know?
But Romero got hit with 17 finishers and was the pin here, so.
By the way, Wardlow, we ever seen that guy again?
I hope so. Genuinely. We jump to Sunday.
The War Dog's our mascot. If we ever lose War Dog, we might have to completely redo the podcast.
So... we jump to Sunday.
We're in Wardlow's world.
We have the Death Riders take on AR Fox and Top Flight in a World Trios title match. Have we ever seen AR Fox and Top Flight tag? Am I just forgetting
it? Yes, no. It was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Thank you.
I think.
What the fuck, man? Like... Why do we hold this shit hostage?
Last time they tagged was Holiday Bash, Charlie, apparently.
I know, and they brought it up and they were like, oh, they won in 2022. And I'm like, dude, what are we doing, man?
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. It's almost three.
They've had 1,800 partners. And
they've had Leo twice since then, I think. Like, now that might have been after, like, Leo, but still, you know, like, so I think that was resurrecting when they were still super titles. Top Flight are in the shits, let's be honest.
Here's my problem. Why make this a title match? I'm just saying.
No, why make it a fucking title match? The two guys Top Flight brought into their group after worked out better for those guys than it did for Top Flight, which is great for Top Flight to get to say that they helped those guys' careers, right? But they got nothing out of it, and they're going to get nothing out of it because they're not winning this feud.
Yeah, we have so many fucking trios that have been winning that this should have been a fucking... I understand it's marketing, it's all that, this, that, and the other. Whatever, this continues to be the most frustrating fucking title reign I think I've ever seen.
What the dumb thing is, too, the Death Riders didn't even attack them after the match. They weren't even important enough for them to do that.
Yeah.
It was Andretti and fucking and Brush. Which, I mean, good for them, obviously. That makes them look like monsters. But I mean, what?
Yeah.
You're not even worth the fucking champion's time that they just got a title match against? You were literally just fodder for them, essentially. What the fuck?
Yeah, and that's what I'll say. Booking logistics aside, I like AR Fox and Top Flight teaming. I was just like, really? This is the route? At least if it was a non-title match, there would have been a sliver of a chance that they could win. But, you know, it is what it is.
Be the third member of Top Flight, or maybe not the third member of Top Flight, but maybe their trios partner. If we're going singles Bowens, I would like actually not mind them as a trio.
Yeah. I'd still like to bring back Matt Sydal. I thought that was Dante's best partner.
I would as well, but I don't think we ever see him again.
I thought he worked so well with Dante, and the story was there, and... Oh, well.
Throw him against Speedball. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Matt Sydal. Let's go.
Where's Private Party?
Oh, God.
God only knows.
Never seeing them again.
God only knows. It was a fine match. It was fine. Logistics aside, if we're just looking at an exhibition match, I thought it was a fine trios match. So, yeah. Pac hit a tombstone fastball special, got the victory on AR Fox, of course. Crew jumped Top Flight, referees, yeah, did their thing. They announced this, which I guess I got a lot of people chatting. April 16th, Spring Breakthrough. It is officially when AEW Dynamite passes WCW Monday Nitro as the longest running primetime wrestling show in Turner history.
Yeah, they're trying to get Bischoff to sound off.
They're celebrating it as they should, because that is a big deal. AEW has had, and we'll do a whole big show when that happens, but they have had so many fucking speed bumps.
Maybe what we could do for that, this could be fun. I don't know how easy this will be able to do, but we have access to some of it now, so we could at least certainly do some research. Maybe we do top 10 episodes of Dynamite or something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been – that'd be cool. And it's been a thing where
individual list. We'll just put together a list because that'll probably be easier than us trying to do an individual list just because that, you know, that could also take like an hour of the show. But
well, just one of the biggest things is 5 months into being on television, the COVID hits. And it's just – there's been so many speed bumps. And they had to work the kinks out too. Because AEW Dynamite has not always been this great. It started off hot, and it had some stuff, and Young Bucks and Kenny will tell you they had to learn things. And I thought they've learned them very well. And I think, like I said, 2024 is my favorite year of AEW we've ever had, and 2025 is off to a great start. So, recaps, this, that, and the other. There was something with Kyle O'Reilly in here. I think it was along – I didn't write it down. I think it was along the lines of they didn't like the disrespect from FTR.
So I do actually know what that was. So Adam Cole wants a third match, and that's where I mentioned.
As he should.
Adam, he wants a third Dynasty. Match, yes. We should run that at Dynasty 100%. Get those two on the pay-per-view. Book it, please. But FTR versus Undisputed is going to be a thing, and I do believe that will be where they probably turn them, I would think. Unless it's going to be on TV, then probably not. But if it's going to be at the pay-per-view, I think that's the spot that you do it in.
Let me toss you this. What if this is their only opportunity to do Dax versus Cash? Like, actually do it.
No, we have done it on TV, right? But
yes.
It was a one-off match. Because they didn't know if they were ever going to be able to do it, right? Because they were talking about
what
retiring.
What if we do a legitimate feud with them?
I mentioned that earlier. I would be 100% down, especially, and you don't even have to break them up at the end. Just have them, have to settle their differences in the ring. Yep. I think that makes complete sense for those two. I'm so down. I would be so down for that.
This might be their
maybe
real chance
to
these do it.
Guys. And then that causes a rift between those two for a bit.
Yeah.
I would be down. And that would give them something to do. They don't have to hog up the tag team division, and Dax gets to have some more singles matches on his resume. I mean, I gave him a wrestler of the year once already. I don't think he's winning it again this year with the talent that we have. But hey, you never know. That could be the match of the year for me that I'm just like, man, I don't know how you're ever beaten.
I mean, in terms of matches, Danny Garcia's wrestler of the year right now, 3 months in. He's had five of our favorites. I mean, and it's not even close. He's killing it week in and week out. So,
well, when you factor in pay-per-views, though, Kenny and Will are fucking absolutely annihilating. So
will it? You know, it's one of those things. If Danny keeps this up all year, it's going to be hard to beat him. It's going to be very hard to beat him. Which is,
I mean, I still think
insane.
Kenny still has match of the year, and it was the first match he had in the year. So it's tough,
Bandito gets a quick squash over Johnny TV. Very, very big win for him. The 21 Plux for the victory. He demanded Jericho bring his brother's mask. All three members came out of the learning tree. He had his mask in hand. Said that he wished it could be different, but he had to show people what happened when they took Chris Jericho too lightly.
The free Brian Keith side was brutal.
It was pretty good. Again, I think this has been a much needed shift in the learning tree these past few weeks. Not that it was bad. I think the learning tree's been on the upturn for probably about a month or two now. I'd have to really pinpoint
it. So funny, you jokingly said last week, or maybe it was me, one of us jokingly on the podcast said every now and then Jericho has to remind us how good he is, right?
Yep.
He literally says that in the promo because it's true.
I think
that was
when he
was
talking about the Hamlet thing.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Oh, yeah. Every now and then he does have to remind you how good he is. And he's literally telling you that because he is one of the, even if we don't consider him the GOAT, he is one of the greatest wrestlers to ever do this. He's got one of the longest standing careers, especially in the style that he wrestles. I mean, come on, man. Like, you have to acknowledge the guy. Yeah. You don't have to say he's your favorite or anything, but you have to acknowledge he's had a pretty great career. So, we know he can do this.
They're setting this up for what feels like a Bandito victory. So, hey.
If Bandito loses, if this is just Jericho getting his win back from Bandito on television when he made his career all that time ago, I
don't want Bandito to win this fucking title. I got to tell you, I'm fucking scared of it. I think this could be bad. I don't have confidence in them.
Yeah, I don't want Bandito to be banished to the Ring of Honor realm. That would not be good for him. He's so hot right now. I think Bandito is ambitious and thinks he can bring the title to AEW television again. I think
maybe
it's a good precedent because both of the most recent champions have been on TV quite a bit. So, the Ring of Honor World Championship is essentially an AEW mid-card title. We joked about it earlier, but it really is. So, I mean, maybe, but yeah, I could see a scenario where he gets pinched to Ring of Honor, and I really hope that doesn't happen.
We got to keep this thing in Ring of Honor. That's why I'm still fighting for it. I want Lee Johnson to be the champion. I think that was, it would kind of defy what we need Ring of Honor to be.
That was the thing that killed Ring of Honor for me. It felt like such an easy fucking move to make that you had the path set up. He was getting over with the Ring of Honor crowd, which said anybody getting over with that fucking crowd of Ring of Honor at that time should have been acknowledged, like, because there was just no energy in it. And it felt like such an easy move to put him with that championship, and they just never did it. And yeah, so I don't know. I hope and pray for Bandido that is just but here's the other thing, and this is how I'll just say this. If he loses, isn't that also not great? Like, you know, like
it might not be great in the moment, but there's better odds of him being booked for All In if he's losing this title or if he doesn't win the title. That's just kind of where I'm at. I think there's better odds of him being booked at All In because he absolutely should be. It's in Texas. He's the most wanted. He should be going for a championship at All In. And maybe it's him defending the Ring of Honor title against, I don't know, fucking Will Ospreay. But they'll do something
against. He's a madman, you know.
Yeah. Meghan Bain hype video. They literally made her feel like a god. And that's why Tony Soma's backstage and wondering who died and made Meghan Bain god. She's promised to cut her head off the mighty Megazon. So, cool stuff. Harley Cameron got a quick victory over Amina Belmont with her finishing move. Lexi's has another thing with Don Callis, and she has a lot of yappage going on, and he announced that Fletcher will be facing Brody King next week. I don't know if we got a pronunciation on this. Los Titanes del Aire is Del Aire. Del Aire just sounds wrong.
You got it right the first time, I believe.
Yeah, it's, Los Titanes del Aire.
We're going to be calling them Commander and Hologram. I'm sorry.
Nah, fuck that. They defeated La Facción Ingobernable. And our Luchador money main event match that was an absolute blast from the past. I don't know. It was good. It was against Jalisco and the Beast Muertos. Really fun Lucha Libre. And when we talk about, you know, people wanting to watch standout stuff and new shit, toss them this. What do you think of this? What do you think of this, fellas?
What do you think of fucking that? What have
four luchadors out there, plus the Harley Graham just going nuts. So,
have we ever seen Harley Graham and Harley Cameron in the same room, Charlie?
I've heard rumors, but I have not seen them in the same room now.
Portal
Bomb, Rope Walking Shooting Star for the victory. They announced an insane card for Dynamite. Let's just fucking run through that real quick. Kenny Omega versus Blake Christian. Kyle Fletcher versus Brody King. Mark Briscoe versus Kinosuke Takeshita. Powerhouse Hobbs versus Mark Davis. That's going to be a little sad for me. Thunderstorm reuniting versus Bane and Penelope Ford. I'll get to that in a second. FTR sit-down interview and MJF will respond. It's going to be a little sad because I thought that was going to be Mark Davis's new tag partner. I thought their two matches that they had together were fucking phenomenal.
I mean, they're on opposite ends of the heel face persuasion right now. Obviously, you could workshop that, but I just don't know how you'd get there.
I think there's a world where those guys are tag team champs right now.
I don't want I don't think Hobbs should go back to the Don Callis family. I think taking him out was probably the right move. You know?
Yeah. And I think there's a world where they said fuck it after those two matches that they had together and said, you know what? This is a tag team. They could be in the Murder Machine spot, for example, where they are, or even our current champion spot, where it's like, yeah, they're just a big deal. They just got over. Fuck it. But it'll be cool to see him do a one-on-one match. That being said, yeah, some pretty interesting stuff. Lee Johnson will be on Dynamite in Blake Christian's corner. So keep an eye out for that. That being said, everyone, hope you enjoyed this week's rendition of Eat Sleep Elite. We'll be back next week where we're talking more wrestling. If you watch Daredevil Born Again, we have our ESE Fantasy show.
Daredevil what now?
Born Again.
We have our ESE Fantasy show where you can listen to us yap about Daredevil and soon to be yapping about Andor and The Last of Us. So yeah, check that out if you're inclined to. And if you are new here, hit the follow button and check us out next week. Long live the fighters at boy.
Some freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy.
Bloody clown.
Go fuck yourself.
And I am a sports entertainer.